Los Angeles Police Harbor Division detectives found Lois Petrie's body draped sideways across the bed in her tiny bungalow apartment. It was the day after Christmas, 1972. A blanket partially covered her. Beneath the blanket, the 43-year-old was naked except for one leg of her capri pants and a pair of panties, both hooked around her left calf. Her legs dangle from the edge of the mattress far enough that her feet touch the floor. She was cold to the touch, a sure sign that she had been dead for at least several hours. It didn't appear that anybody had broken into the house, as Detective Richard Bingston of the LAPD Cold Case Homicide Unit. There was no forced entry. There was a small hint of blood on one of the pillows, but other than that, there was no blunt force trauma to the victim. She wasn't cut up. She wasn't bleeding anywhere. It was obvious that sex had been involved, but it was unclear to the detectives if it had been consensual or not. She was nude, Detective Bingston says. Some of the clothes were turned inside out. Some of the clothes were still inside of other ones, like a shirt inside of a jacket. So at that point, the investigators aren't going to know immediately whether this was a rape or a consensual sexual act. You know, maybe this started off as a consensual sex act, but maybe it finished in a very different way that resulted in the death of the victim. But who would kill a lady with no known enemies, especially at Christmas time?
Recorded in Rocket City, USA. No bullshit. Just real talk. And now, Deuce Conrad.
Lois's apartment at 346 West 10th Street was small. Just three rooms, a bedroom, a small sitting room, and a tiny kitchen. Investigators found no murder weapon in the apartment. Likely, Lois's death had been the result of strangulation, probably manual strangulation, which means by the hand. Now, there was no blood other than the spot on the pillow, and that same pillow also had a smear of mucus-like fluid on it, which may have come from Lois's mouth if someone had held the pillow over her face. Now, crime scene technicians dusted for fingerprints, and they collected a handkerchief lying crumpled up on the dresser. But if Lois had been raped, there was the possibility that the killer had used the handkerchief to clean himself off. Any bodily fluids found on the handkerchief could be used to determine the killer's blood type. Now, at a later autopsy, a pathologist used a rape kit to swab fluid samples from the parts of Lois's body that may have been involved in a sexual assault, and those samples were preserved on slides for blood typing and possible later comparison to a suspect. That is, if the police were able to identify one. Now, in 1972, semen, hair, and blood evidence was useful, but it's modern forensic DNA matching that was still some two decades away, and a statewide DNA database in California was almost 30 years in the future. Now, no one at the crime scene that day could have ever imagined that it would be more than 30 years before a forensic investigator, who was not even born yet, would match the DNA on those slides to Lois's killer. Born on June 13, 1926 in Lexington, Kentucky, Adolf Laudenberg mostly grew up with his German immigrant father, as his mother had died a few years after his birth. Now, at some point, he took up whittling unique walking canes made from salvaged wood and manzanita shrubs, which he would either give away or sell for $10 on the street before joining the U.S. Navy as part of the construction battalion. And it was while serving in Trinidad in 1944 that 18-year-old Adolf met Annelle, a single mother of one. And the couple eventually tied the knot, and he adopted her son Steve before permanently moving to California. There, they would also conceive a son together. His name was Greg. While in California, Adolf briefly worked as a security guard of a steel plant, then became a cab driver in the 1960s. But according to neighbors, the Laudenbergs were a odd fit. Annelle worked at a dance studio and was outgoing and health conscious, while Adolf was a generous but reclusive man who mostly kept to himself. But despite their differences, their marriage lasted 30 years before the couple separated, as Annelle, who didn't return her husband's feelings of love, outed herself as a stripper. Adolf would remarry, but even that marriage would end in divorce. And at some point, he traveled for a short time to New Orleans before returning to San Pedro. Listening to true crime podcasts can make you question your safety and security. And what better way to protect yourself than with a safe room? And why stop there? Make your entire house a safe space from serial killers and zombies and tornadoes and hurricanes. You see, insulated concrete form homes built with Nadura not only offer great curb appeal, but are comfortable and strong and safe year-round. ICF foam block construction offers superior energy efficiency, occupant comfort, sound dampering, fire resistance, and disaster resilience for the life of your home. And for those of you in North Alabama, North Mississippi, and Southern Tennessee, it is simple as emailing our good friend Carlos at BC3 ICF Distributor, LLC. Located in Phil Campbell, Alabama, Carlos has everything you need to build a fortified home at a fraction of the cost of a traditional build. For more information about how Nadura ICF can provide you safety and security, email bc3.naduraicfdistributor@yahoo.com. Using his job as a cab driver, Laudenberg's M.O. consisted of picking up lonely, alcoholic, or ill women who reminded him of his ex-wife, whom he would then bind, rape, and strangle. And this happened either in L.A. or San Francisco. Now, he was even questioned by the police during the initial investigations. But Laudenberg denied everything. And since the perpetrator left barely any clues behind, he was let off. Lois Petrie would be the first of his victims. Adolf Laudenberg next targeted 50-year-old Catherine Medina, who was drinking in a local San Pedro bar on August the 18th, 1974. This came following an argument with her husband. Once the latter came to fetch her, the couple began walking home, but the victim suddenly ran off in an inebriated state and reportedly got into Adolf's cab. But it was the next day that Catherine's naked, dead body would be found beside some bushes in Harbor Lake Recreational Park. Now, medical examiners confirmed that, like Lois, even she had been raped and then strangled dead. But with no evidence and the primitive DNA testing technology, the case went cold. Now, about a month after the Medina killing on September 4th, the killer would strike again. This time, Anna Felsch, who worked at a hot dog stand on Cabrillo Beach, disappeared after leaving a San Pedro bar in the dead of night. And once again, she was inebriated. A few hours later, a construction worker found her body a few blocks away. Felsch had been sexually assaulted and strangled to death. Now, due to the fact that Laudenberg looked like Santa Claus, his activities soon became overgrown with speculation, and the story of a Christmas killer with a beard, gifts, and a red suit appeared. Adolf Laudenberg made his attacks all year round, including during the Christmas holidays, but this was not at all connected with his beliefs. Adolf's last proven victim was Leah Griffin, whom he bound, raped, and strangled on March 21, 1975. The 60-year-old was a retired legal secretary who had recently been diagnosed with breast cancer. Leah's nude body was discovered in her room at the Stratford Hotel in San Francisco, with bruises on her neck. It was on weekends and holidays that made it easier for the killer to find a victim, because in bars and on the streets, it is much more likely to meet lonely, tipsy women whom he hunted. But young Laudenberg was actually a very peculiar type, you see. His wife preferred to spend time in noisy companies with music and drinks, than Adolf was recluse. His behavior seemed strange to many. He did not leave the house unnecessarily, and he could stare at one point for hours, and his hobby was carving walking sticks from the branches of a bush that's called the barberry, or the bearberry. You know, it wouldn't be long before the Lautenberg family would break up. His young and overly sociable stripper wife was too fond of other men. While completely refusing intimacy to Adolf, her legal husband. And so it's possible that something was always wrong with the guy, but it is known for sure that after the failure in family life, he went crazy even more. And after the divorce, Adolf remarried, but this marriage too was even more fleeting than the first. And it was after the second divorce that he made no attempts to arrange his personal life. And it seems as though he always lived alone. He did not receive an education, so he worked either as an assistant or as a watchman at a steel plant or as a taxi driver. And so it was the work in a taxi that allowed Lautenberg to start killing with impunity. The first victims of the maniac appeared in the early 70s, as we've mentioned. The taxi driver always acted in a standard way. He picked up drunk middle-aged women on the streets, on weekends and holidays. And then he built a rapport with them by asking them about life. If the life of fellow travelers was full of disappointments, and they themselves were sick, the maniac sincerely sympathized with them and then killed them.
Do you have a beard? It's a legitimate question. You know, a beard says a lot about a man. A beard can define a man just by looking at him. Screw what they say. You can judge a book by its cover, and a beard is one hell of a cover. But let me ask you this, how do you take care of your beard? Are you putting chemicals into your face that will basically eat the hide off of a zombie? Stop that shit. Be a badass and start using badass beard care. Look, it's all natural. It's made by badass vets. And it will make your beard so incredibly soft, so incredibly manly. And you can get a free trial set today by going to deuceconrad.com and selecting On Promotions.
Adolf Lautenberg's rejection required a more careful approach to the selection of victims. Women were supposed to be drunk, sick, and unhappy like his mother, and remind him of his first wife and be no younger than him. Now, if some of the criteria didn't match, the taxi driver simply gave the woman a lift to be to the specific address and said goodbye to her very sweetly. And you see, it was due to his strict requirements that Adolf was not a particularly productive killer. Only four victims of his attacks have been proven, although there are suspicions that many more could be out there. Now, apart from these four women, Adolf was also suspected of the 1974 murders of 55-year-old Irene Hind and 83-year-old Maud Burgess in San Francisco, but was let off the hook when the DNA evidence did not match him. Hind was the owner of a San Francisco bar on Larkin Street called Irene's Dahmer Club, a generous woman who helped the people who frequented her place, and she was found raped and strangled on March 12, 1974. And Burgess was a retiree who helped with the management of her San Francisco apartment building, and it was the elderly Burgess that was found raped and strangled in her unit in November of 1974. Now, at that scene, a partial fingerprint was located, but it was not found to match Lautenberg. The Santa Strangler committed all of his murders in California, where he lived and worked, and with some victims very close to his home. Now, those victims, the list of victims in question, include two women over the age of 80. And as we can see, each time Laudenberg found more and more elderly and unhappy women, he simply enjoyed their grief, posing as a sympathetic good man. And having learned another story, Adolf attacked the women, tied them up, raped, and strangled them. At the same time, he acted very cautiously, as for a simple guy who had only graduated from school. And this maniac, Adolf Laudenberg, left no evidence except for traces of DNA, which he simply could not know about then. The police had a great chance to catch the killer in 1975. Then Laudenberg himself spoke in detail about his murders to a girl who was preparing to become the wife of his adopted son, Steve. The guy whose mother was that same Annelle, Adolf's first unhappy love, the one he chose as a bride that his stepfather did not like, that he decided to scare her away with hints that she might become the next victim. And it was the frightened bride who turned to the police, but they only laughed at her story, believing that they just want to intimidate the future daughter-in-law. And this, despite the fact that the entire California police force at the time was actively looking for a serial killer. And it's difficult to say how many women this negligence of the cops cost their lives. In 2002, history repeated itself again. This time, the only native son of Laudenberg from his second marriage was going to marry. But this time, the old maniac also managed to fall in love with his young daughter-in-law. He watched her. He wrote notes to her, leaving them under the car wipers, and in response to attempts to stop courtship, Adolf Laudenberg threatened to kill her. And so one day Adolf got so upset that he told about the murdered women, and this time the son and daughter-in-law went to the police. But fortunately, this time the officers took the statement seriously. And after checking the details of Laudenberg's story and the facts, they were convinced that he was, in fact, the killer. But even with all of this, it was not enough to bring charges. And the investigators had no direct evidence, and the police had sperm samples from the Santa Strangler, but there was absolutely nothing to verify them with.
Are you looking for unbiased news in a world of biased media? Look no further. 1440 provides an impartial view of what's happening in the world so our readers can form their own conclusions. 1440 scours hundreds of sources each and every day to bring you a single morning briefing thoughtfully curated by experts, straight to your email with no haggling or unnecessary spam. Get even more benefits by signing up through the Deuce Conrad Show affiliate link. Visit www.deuceconradshow.com and select promotions to sign up today.
In California, there are many bureaucratic obstacles that make it quite difficult to simply ask relatives of a suspect for his hair or any other materials for genetic analysis. The samples, oddly enough, must be provided by him himself, but it was impossible to contact Laudenberg directly so as not to frighten him off. It was possible to expose Santa the Strangler, thanks to his passion for all his life, which was wood carving. Now, Adolf actually reached certain heights in his skill and generously gave away his handicrafts to all those in need, or sometimes sold them for a symbolic cost. Once in an interview with one of the local newspapers, the old maniac said, "I'd just love to give good things. I like that thanks to McCain's, it becomes easier for older people." You know, what a cute old man, one might say. Now, one of the policemen, posing as a collector, made an appointment with Laudenberg in a cafe, and it was from this short rendezvous which discussed the intricacies of wood carving and the properties of wood species that the investigator took valuable evidence. It was a coffee cup with a DNA sample from Adolf. Now, the rest was already a matter of technology. However, detectives had an advantage. They had DNA technology in their arsenal of investigative tools. DNA analysts from the LAPD Scientific Investigation Division evaluated slides that were recovered during the autopsies of the deceased women. And several samples were sent to the laboratory for processing, and a DNA profile was obtained from the evidence collected from Lois Petrie. In the meantime, detectives from LAPD's Career Criminal Apprehension Unit placed Adolf Laudenberg under surveillance and recovered physical evidence. And then an undercover officer invited Laudenberg for coffee at that Torrance restaurant. And it was after discussing various topics that Laudenberg walked away without throwing out his cup. And that was when another officer swept in and got the cup from which the DNA samples were extracted and sent for testing. And it was those DNA samples that matched seminal fluid found on Lois Petrie's corpse. On September the 5th, 2003, Robbery Homicide Division's Cold Case Unit arrested 77-year-old Adolf Theodore Laudenberg for the 1972 murder of Lois Petrie. Adolf Laudenberg was arrested for Penal Code Section 187A, murder. Bail was set at $1 million, and that was at the time of his arrest. Laudenberg, at the time of his arrest, was living in a camper that was parked in the 1000 block of West 251st Street in the city of Los Angeles. And although criminal charges were not filed in the cases of Catherine Medina and Anna Felsch, robbery homicide detectives continued to focus on Adolf Laudenberg as the primary suspect. And despite all of his statements declaring his innocence, Adolf Laudenberg would be found guilty of the Petrie killing and sentenced to none other than life in prison.
Hey, Deuce Conrad here. I just want to tell you about Ibotta. Ibotta is one of the greatest things I have ever laid my eyes on. It's a great tool for actually earning money. And trust me, I've tried all these surveys and everything that the internet seems to say that you're going to make money, but nothing has made me money like Ibotta. In my first week of trying Ibotta, I earned approximately $40 just shopping. It's like coupon savings for people that don't like to clip coupons. Anyways, there is a link in the description of this podcast for you to become a partner with me in Ibotta. And when you submit your first receipt, you'll earn $10. That simple, that easy, just by going and shopping at places that you're already shopping, such as Walmart, Kroger, Publix. And it's easy to cash out as well. You can get gift cards to Amazon or have a direct payment made to you. Anyways, check the link down below. Use the referral code KAXRFWJ and earn $10 on your first receipt submitted.
The circumstances surrounding how the officers obtained the DNA sample raise some privacy issues, with police arguing that the discarded items were considered public property and therefore no legal permission was required to get a sample. And a California appellate court upheld the conviction, rejecting Laudenberg's argument that the expectation was that a restaurant employee would have thrown the cup out. You see, when detectives secretly took that disposable coffee cup that had touched the lips of murder suspect Adolf Laudenberg, they did not violate his privacy rights according to the appellate court. During Lautenberg's trial in 2006, jurors heard about the DNA evidence. That, along with two confessions Lautenberg made to family members, led to his conviction for murder. And it was by then that the former taxicab driver from Harbor City was sick and frail. At his sentencing hearing in May of 2007, he lay on a gurney as he was ordered to spend the rest of his life in prison without possibility of parole. Lautenberg, though, has never been charged in the deaths of Anna Felsch, 45, who was found dead in 1974 at a San Pedro construction site, nor for the murder of Catherine Medina, 45, whose body was discovered in 1974 on the shore of Machado Lake in Harbor City, or in the murder of Leehan Griffin in San Francisco in 1975. Now, Adolf Lautenberg's attorneys argued before his trial that jurors should not hear about the DNA evidence and that contention was the sole issue he raised in his appeal. He said that he did not willfully abandon his plastic foam cup at a Torrance donut shop following a meeting with a detective, but the Los Angeles police detective used the ruse that he was investigating a car theft to get Lautenberg to sit down with him and eat, in the hope that he would leave some saliva behind. Now, after the half-hour meeting, the detective lingered and took the cup, placing it somewhere for pickup by an undercover officer who was monitoring the meeting. The Second District Court of Appeals agreed with the trial judge that the evidence was properly collected. When customers leave a disposable item on a restaurant table and walk away, the implicit intent is that they are abandoning it. Now, the three-justice panel also rejected Lautenberg's argument that the expectation was that a restaurant employee would have thrown the cup out, not that it would be intercepted by the police. But his cup, the justices agreed on, was no different from a bag of garbage left for pickup. On June 26, 2015, Adolf Lautenberg died of natural causes in a California prison. He was age 89.
Hey there, it's Deuce Conrad here. I just want to say thank you for listening to this podcast and all of your support. If you want to listen to previous episodes or you want to listen to this episode again, go to deuceconradshow.com and you'll be able to find all of our episodes from the last couple of years. Also, check us out on TikTok and YouTube. We got some funny videos over there that you just might find interesting. Until next time, I'll see you then.